Your pharmacy's next Eureka moment is only one conference away. Catalyst Connect is the pharmacy event of the year. Connect with your pharmacy. Leverage your Pioneer RX software. Enjoy the sights and sounds of Nashville, Tennessee. Register for Catalyst Connect now and save big with early bird prices until March 31st. See you in Nashville.
Scott Pace, everyone knows Scott Pace, but welcome back. Thank you for being on again. He's a licensed pharmacist and attorney, partner at the Impact Management Group, co-owner with his wife, Ann, of Cavanaugh Pharmacy, former EVP and CEO of Arkansas Pharmacists Association, helped do a bunch of things there. A couple of those things were just past scope of practice reform, along with some PBM legislation reform. Welcome back, Scott Pace.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's good to be here.
All right, man. So I know when we left off, I think last time, everyone go watch it. But I do think you moved your pharmacy into a bank, a former bank.
Very good memory. Yeah, we moved our pharmacy. It's almost been 2 years ago now.
Okay.
We had a real estate investor try to rent us out a bank two blocks down the street from our main store. And he wanted an awful lot of money to rent it. And so I said, I won't rent it from you, but I'll buy it. And so he ended up selling us the bank. And we did a remodel with our friends Retail Designs out of Tennessee. Okay. Quick plug for them. They did a great job. Kevin Elder did a great job helping us design the space and use it as best we could. And we have just grown dramatically over the last 2 years since we moved.
So question, who gets the vault? I'm assuming there's a vault, right? Is there a vault? There's a vault.
There's a walk-in, like 125 square foot vault in the thing, and it's actually in the front end of the store. You know, there's two things when you buy an old bank building: you can't move, the drive-through window, and you can't move the vault unless you want to spend an awful lot of money doing both of those things. So the drive-through window needed to stay where it was, right, which is behind the pharmacy counter. And so the vault became a walk-in storage place for all of our front-end items. So if you are looking for a front-end item that we have that is not in stock, we will open this 2,000-pound vault door to see if we have it stored in the vault. And it's really cool too, because it's got concrete walls, obviously concrete floor, and it's got a concrete ceiling too. So one of the things we didn't expect is we were going to get an extra 125 square foot of attic storage that we could stack as much stuff on it as we want, because it's like, you know, stacking it on a foundation. So all of our records,
that's true,
instead of worried about them, you know, the paper records, stacking them on, you know, ceiling rafters, they're actually on concrete in the attic. It's kind of weird.
Got it. Wow. That's kind of a cool thing to say to a patient walking in and going, let me check the vault.
Right. It's neat. People like it. We actually built these fake doors in front of it that have like funny socks on it. So they're kind of like this, but if we need to access the vault, they open and expose the vault door, and then we can open this gigantic vault. It's kind of fun to show people.
Nice. All right. So I'd like to start off. You guys do so much at this pharmacy. You have grown a lot as well. I know the start of 2024 has been strange. A little bit with, to say the least, with the new DIR fee structure, I guess you'd call it. Now it's pretty much just baked into the adjudication somewhat. And then also, if it comes up, what's going on with the Change Healthcare situation as well. But before we get into some of those pieces, I noticed you guys were still doing testing and other types of testing with strep and flu, probably toward the backside of the season now, but how do you feel like that's going for you?
It's been great. So we've, you know, Arkansas is very fortunate. Our working with our state pharmacy association several years ago, we passed a prescriptive authority for pharmacists for items that happen after a CLIA waived exam. So their CLIA waived tests. So you know, we've been doing strep and flu pre-COVID. We always did those, but we couldn't prescribe. And so post-COVID, we did, as you know, a ton of COVID tests during the early days of the pandemic. That was a big success, raised our awareness that we were doing that to a lot of folks. And now we routinely do strep and flu, RSV to some extent, literally every day of the week.
Really?
It's all cash for us. And we've got prescriptive authority in Arkansas, like I mentioned. So if a patient has a positive strep test, we can prescribe the antibiotic now. If they have positive flu test, we can prescribe the Tamiflu or Zofluza. And it's really been a great service for the community. I mean, the reality is that we had, you know, urgent cares down the street that people were waiting at and backed up and, you know, paying their deductible expenses. That most people have a high dollar deductible plan around here. So they're paying those deductible expenses at the urgent care. And now they're able to just walk in and have that happen for us. We still have an appointment-based model.
Sure.
But of course, we don't turn people away if they want to walk in.
That's interesting, because we just talked about the AMA. AMA, I guess I'll just call it an article or post, that came out around like trying to lobby for restricting all of those things you just talked about, which is just great timing, I guess, from that perspective of having that. We just did a podcast where Josh talked like 10 minutes on it. And then now, you know, if you want to share it, do you have a take or an opinion a little bit about that?
Absolutely.
That post, man.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, it highlights two things. Number one, AMA's out of touch. From a practical standpoint, the physicians in our community, our physician friends that trade with us at our pharmacy, I mean, they're some of the people that use the services that we offer from a point of care testing perspective. So not only is it something that they appreciate for their patients, they appreciate it for themselves too. And so I understand that as a national organization, they want to be protectionist for the medical community.
Yeah.
But they need to be progressive too for what's good for healthcare and what's good for patient access. And again, in Arkansas, we're unique. I know. We had a physician who helped us to work on the legislative language to make sure that we did it right, so that we had an opportunity to work in collaboration and not in competition with the medical community. I think the uptake has been good because of that. And so, to that end, I'll also say we're pretty fortunate in pharmacy from a Pharmacy National Association perspective, is that we've got groups that get it for the most part from a perspective of what's going on the ground in local pharmacies. And just, there's just something that's a little out of touch about those perspectives from the AMA. And I wish there was an opportunity to collaborate more instead of being viewed as a competitor.
Great way to put it. Where were you when my kid couldn't figure out if it was flu or strep or something like that? I was just talking about that. And it was just like an urgent care visit. If you wait too late, I work all day, right? If you wait too late, you get into ER hours and you start getting billed ER rates, right? And things like that. So how great would it have been to walk into a pharmacy and be like, look, mostly healthy. Everyone's got the flu, he knows. Can we check?
And you know what? That's right. And what's so interesting is that there's actually going to be some over-the-counter flu test coming out here before too long.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just that it's competitive, but it's seem to be competitive, but it's about to be an over-the-counter patient-directed thing for some folks. They're always going to value the knowledge that we bring to the table.
Yeah.
Just like we're always going to value the knowledge that physicians bring to the table. You know, we've got built-in practice, policies within our store that if we have a positive symptomatic patient, a negative symptomatic patient,
right,
that we still refer on to a physician if there's something additional that needs to be triaged and seen. So, you know, it's about the team.
Yeah, it is. And I was trying to think through like the last pod with me and Josh. There's everyone's got their own set of expertise they bring to the whole healthcare team. And there are some things that can happen at a lower level that kind of everybody, I think, can help with. And almost from if you're talking from a rural access perspective or something like that, you need those access points for the patients.
100%. And I think that what gets missed a lot of times, Mark, is that these patients that are sick and need care, sometimes their choice isn't physician or pharmacist. Sometimes their choice is care or no care.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it seems almost inhumane to some extent to think that no care is better than care from a pharmacist. And that it's not a zero sum game. It's really, how do we best take care of the patient?
You alluded to RSV just a second ago. Wanted to get, because you're one of the most progressive pharmacists I know, you and Ann. I give most of that credit to Ann. Give her most of that credit to Ann.
That's what I do with Marsha too.
Give her the 100%. If everyone knows me, they definitely know Marsha for sure. So can you tell me about kind of the last, I don't know if that's 6, 8 months, almost 10 months maybe now, of the RSV vaccine being launched, what you've seen?
Well, there's two different, you know, spikes on the RSV discussion. Just throw those out there if that's okay.
Yeah.
The first is the point of care testing piece on the RSV.
Okay.
So we do a little bit of point of care testing on RSV. And what we have found is that we've got a nurse practitioner friend who works in the emergency room at one of the local children's hospitals. And when we told her that we were doing RSV point of care testing, her response was, "That's phenomenal. They can come to the ER at the children's hospital and wait for 3 hours and be tested. And if they're positive, they get sent home with symptomatic care. And if they're negative, they get sent home with symptomatic care. But there's no, you know, treatment for RSV other than your symptoms." And she goes, "Now they don't have to wait 3 hours. They can go to the pharmacy. And if they're positive, they can get sent home with symptomatic care. And if they're negative, they can get sent home with symptomatic care." So, you know, you can kind of speed things through the process and let the ER in that particular situation not deal with something that can be taken care of at a lower level of care and make the ER really for what it's for. So I think that's been good from an RSV perspective. On the vaccine side of the world, man, vaccines just keep coming. And we saw just a massive uptake, as I think many folks did this year in the RSV vaccine. Yeah. So it was not uncommon this fall for patients to, and we're again appointment based on vaccines, for patients to schedule appointments for flu and COVID and RSV all in the same visit. And in the early days of the RSV, we didn't necessarily want to do that at the same visit until we had a little bit more of experience with it and heard what the manufacturers were going to recommend. But it was a very successful RSV flu COVID season for us this year, and a lot of patients got access to another piece of protection for their immune system because pharmacists were there and ready to step up.
Yeah, for sure. Funny story though. I don't know if it's funny. I felt like I was on my deathbed 10 years ago, I think 10, maybe 12. I don't remember. I actually got RSV and, I don't know. I have little ones, you know, especially when they were that younger, they're bottom dwellers. They catch everything. They bring it home. You know that.
Dwellers. I like that.
I can't wait
for you to use that at their wedding. You know,
they catch,
congratulate my little bottom dweller here.
Right. They just catch all the germs, man, and bring them right home. And that was the worst feeling I've ever had ever. I mean, I've had COVID. I'm working on my punch card like 4 times now. And it's still
the
nothing
sixth time
compared.
Is free, by the way. So you get it, you know, 2 more, you're good.
I hope so. Okay, cool. 20. So, I like to start off this first quarter with everybody I can ask in the podcast of, like, in your pharmacy, what are you looking at? What are you paying attention to right now at the beginning of the year?
Well, I mean, there's several things that have hit us all in 2024 that I think we have to acknowledge. The first is the Change Healthcare debacle, for lack of a better phrase. Right now, it was a cyber attack. That's what we think happened. That's what they are saying happened. Was it a nation state? Was it a rogue folks? I mean, we've had two different stories out of that the last couple of weeks. What we do know is that we're 2.5 weeks into this, and pharmacy has been affected from an eligibility standpoint, from an eligibility check standpoint, from a coupon processing standpoint. But for the most part, pharmacy has been affected to a lesser degree. And we'll say we're not affected, but to a lesser degree than our folks in the hospital and medical practices world. But But as we sit here right now with the new COVID vaccine booster recommendation for folks 65 and older, you know, one of the things my wife said to me this morning before she left the house was, I'm not sure we should turn on the COVID appointments yet because we still can't bill Medicare Part B because, you know, our Part B processor is still affected by it. So, you know, we're impacted, just not to the same degree as the hospitals. I'll tell you, the hospitals and the cancer centers and all those folks that use Change as their mandated clearinghouse through their electronic medical records, they are just now starting to feel what the impact is going to be on them, because they've had, you know, their claims are like ours, 2, 3, 4 weeks behind when you actually submit the claim is when you get your payment. So the dollars have continued flowing in. And now all of a sudden, they haven't been able to submit claims in 2, 2.5 weeks.
Right.
And so the dollars are about to hit when they finished from their previous claims processing, and they haven't been able to process a new claim. So they are scampering to try to find an alternative clearinghouse or to bill directly to these insurers. And I'm concerned legitimately that our hospital friends and our physician friends are going to have major, major, major cash flow issues in the very near future as a result of the Change thing. And we don't see a remedy in sight yet. And the last that I heard was our friends at Change/UnitedHealth/Optum are offering short-term loans through, guess who? Optum Bank at, guess what?
That's a thing?
It is a thing. And Optum Bank is offering these loans at with fees attached. Go figure. So, you know, the problem that has affected them, they're now offering to help remedy through their bank with their fees. One more reason that the FTC needs to continue to look at a merger that they already approved to decide if it was really a good thing. Vertical integration in healthcare isn't just harmful to patients and pharmacies. We are clearly seeing it being harmful to other providers right now.
Yeah, when I say that was a thing, I was thinking the bank. I didn't know there was an Optum Bank. I didn't know that was a thing.
They have Optum underwear too, and you're forced to wear that whenever you fill their prescription.
I gotcha. Like quarter of your patients, basically.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so well that and I think you alluded to it, and I just want to hit it home. I think for the hospital peers that you have in your world, almost all of their claims go through that. Like, you know, every single
massive
claim,
amount of them.
Right. Almost. Yep. And in some places I've heard all of them, and some I think I've heard almost all of them. And so could you imagine that spigot? That thing is starting to go from a stream that of cash flow that you used to get is starting to get a little thinner, and now probably start dripping soon. I do wonder if from a, I don't know if you'd call it a legislative perspective, but like an emergent perspective, if someone will step in at some regulatory level and maybe almost like COVID relief loans in a way.
Well, it almost seems like that may be necessary for these hospitals. I mean, when you think about some of the rural hospitals in particular that are already cash strapped and living with a little bit of cash in the bank and having trouble meeting their payroll obligations from cycle to cycle to cycle, this could be, you know, dare I say fatal to some of them. And so I do think that's a big issue. So the Change Healthcare piece from a 20, I mean, I don't mean to hijack that, but going back to the 2024, what we're dealing with, Change is a big piece of that. The other thing that I think has hit everybody the first of the year is this GoodRx nonsense that we have started dealing with in the discount cards incorporated into the funded benefit world, where we've seen these massive negative remittances where we're, you know, being asked to collect copays, and then GoodRx has taken back money through a funded benefit. And it's been very, very perplexing. It's something that I'm frankly concerned about from where the paths crossing amongst our biggest marketplace entities that set our pricing. And I'll give you a personal example.
I
processed a claim for a Tamiflu prescription in January, and we followed the Benjamin Jolly method of putting a mark on our label that said discount card if the contract IDs came back in a specific way, so that we didn't miss anything.
Right.
Now, fortunately, Pioneer's negative remit edit will catch the vast majority of those. We have a quick plug for the negative remit edit, right? And we always
everybody
keep that on, and
use
we
it.
Always watch for that, right?
Yep.
You better use that. You're letting money go out the door if you don't. But Ben created, you know, basically a template, and I know you guys helped with the coding to put on your label the words discount card in the event that one of these contract IDs came through. So we plugged that in and started applying that, and we didn't really see it much because everything was caught in the negative remit.
Sure.
And then in the middle of January, all of a sudden, we filled a prescription for a Tamiflu, and it came out with this giant discount card printed on it. We couldn't figure out why, and we were paid a certain amount. The patient had a copay, but it showed that we were still supposed to be getting another $16 or $17 back from the PBM on this funded benefit. So it was all of a sudden, oh, wait a second, this is a funded insured plan, and a GoodRx contract got applied to a funded insured plan. I'm going to watch it and see what happens, see if I get my $16 and some change on my remittance. So we let that ride for a couple of weeks. Checked on that claim at the beginning of February, and or maybe it was second week of February, and went into my my claims remittance folks that we work with through FDS, and sure enough, we got paid $16.78, exactly what we were supposed to get paid for that claim. Now, what was weird is that we submitted that claim to CVS Caremark. Guess who paid me for that claim?
Zoom in, GoodRx.
OptumRx.
OptumRx, what?
So it starts to raise the question, how are these marketplace competitors exchanging claims data, setting my price, and then facilitating the payment to me from a PBM that's not the one that I submitted the claim to? So, and I've got an Express Scripts claim that used a GoodRx contract on a funded benefit that the payment came through OptumRx as well. And we know that if you look at the notice that went out to folks from CVS Caremark at the end of the year talking about this glorious plan they were unrolling related to GoodRx, it tells you that those six digits in front of GDRX on the network ID is the BIN, excuse me, which stands for the banking identification number of the PBM that's going to process the claim. And so there's at least six, maybe eight unique banking identification numbers that we've identified so far of different PBMs that are processing claims and setting prices and passing data back and forth in the middle of this GoodRx world. And so it's a new thing that we're watching this beginning of this year that I think is unique. I'm worried that there are some price setting concerns that we all need to be paying attention to.
Right.
And I know that those discussions continue to be ongoing as well. I know I've had some of them with our state association in Arkansas, but also with our chief law enforcement officer for the state just in this last week. So there's something doesn't smell right there. So we're keeping an eye and nose on that, Mark, as at the beginning of the year. And then of course the DIR hangover is, the other kind of trifecta of things we're keeping an eye on at the first part of this year. We've kind of escaped the ESI and the Optum pieces for the most part, but we're just about to hit to the time when that last trimester of CVS Caremark
right.
DIRs are about to start being collected. I don't want to sound bearish and say I'm worried, but I am concerned to some extent at just what the impact of that is going to be in the wake of what's going on with the Change Healthcare stuff, because from a cash flow perspective, I can't bill those vaccine claims, but right. I bet there are still some people that are out there giving vaccines, and they're still gonna have to pay for those vaccines. So that's an extra cash flow concern on top of what we're already experiencing. Same way with these coupon cards. I talked to a pharmacist in Maumelle, Arkansas, just a couple of days ago, who filled a Trulicity prescription for a patient who previously had a coupon card, and the difference in amount was multiple hundreds of dollars that the pharmacist decided to keep the ticket on until Change got their stuff together and was able to adjudicate the coupon card. And that's crossing your fingers and hoping that the coupon card, actually pays what it did the previous month.
Right. And it went out the door already. Right. And you're out that money. Your bill's due in 15 days.
That's right. And so there's a lot of extra risk that pharmacists are having to put on their backs or are choosing to put on their backs because one of their marketplace partners can't protect themselves from a cyber attack. And that's, you can't necessarily control the cyber attack.
I understand that.
But you got to make sure you got your redundancies in place to get back up in a timely manner. And so far, we haven't seen that.
Yeah. And if you're, CVS Caremark, you can control how you respond, right? You might can go, I think they already actually pushed out the timeline around collection of those.
They did, and they should get credit for that.
They should get credit for that. And
instead of an 8-week cycle, what's 11 or 12 now is what they decided to do.
Right. And so you look at this as what's going on with change and payments and the fact that if pharmacies aren't trying to strategize I hate to even use the words divvy up care during this change process. Should we try to ask for more? Should we try to ask for some leniency to a degree around, hey, look, I know you stretched it out. Can we stretch it out a little more due to the change piece? You know, another way to get a little bit of a win, I guess, from them. But it's something that I just now thought of with what you're talking about with the kind of the change kind of compounding a little bit of this DRR, I'll just say pain that everyone's kind of thinking about.
It's a cash flow crunch. I mean, and it's a cash flow crunch, not of our own making, which is kind of the hard part of what we deal with in our industry, right? There's, I was saying that at multiple locations the other day, that it feels like 90% of what we deal with in pharmacy is completely out of our control. And the really successful folks in the industry tend to be the ones that have figured out what's the 10% we can control and try to maximize that piece. And I think that's really where we have to focus more of our time and attention going forward, is to recapturing in our minds and in our operations the piece of our business that we can control and run with it.
Does Arkansas have that, law that you can basically have an open dialogue with the patient? Hey, this isn't covering my cost. I'm sorry, I can't fill it for that. We're going to have to bill it to cash if you want it.
Yeah, we do. Okay. And in fact, we've got protections from that perspective, but we've also got the ability to just flat out refuse to fill a prescription if it's paid below our agreed cost without having any concern that you're violating a contract. I sometimes tongue in cheek will go, well, what good's a contract anyway if it's not going to pay you a reasonable fee for doing what you entered the contract for in the first place? And to be honest with you, we've seen there's one particular PBM this year that has been beyond egregious, where you know, they're barely paying you your ingredient cost with virtually no fee. And so, you know, I know that they're in the Part D space at the beginning of this year. One of the PBMs in particular has been the most egregious. It was one that we just chose not to accept. And
I think a lot of people chose not to accept that one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of people still chose to accept it. And, that's one of the quandaries for me, is I want to take care of every single patient that I possibly can in my store. And I can't do that if one contract or two contracts are jeopardizing my ability to take care of everybody, you know? And so that's the hard part of some of that 10% that we can control, is making some of those hard decisions. And I'll tell you, we did that with TRICARE a year and a half ago. We looked at what was being offered in that space, and we looked at our patient population, and we just said, to those folks, we can take care of you, and we can do it with our best cash price, but we're not going to be able to do it on the terms that have been offered by the TRICARE PBM Express Scripts, because it was just wasn't anything we could make money on and still be able to operate our business. And if everybody went to that lowest common denominator, we wouldn't be here very long.
Oh, for sure. And I would think if you can have an open dialogue with the patients, that they get it. Like, you know, they didn't pick this either. Like, they're almost kind of, they can't control much either in that way. They don't get to make those decisions. Now, they can't contribute to the conversation for sure, but they don't get to make that decision either. So they probably feel a little helpless as well.
They get to recapture a little bit of control over what, you know, they can, which is still choosing to pay out of pocket for some of these inexpensive generics. And to be honest with you, that's what 95% of these folks have chosen to do for us, is to stay with us because they value our place in the community. They value the service they get from us. They value the relationship that exists. And they understand that, you know, whatever it is for the, you know, the inexpensive generics is worth it for the value that they get out of the relationship and not getting something from Express Scripts mail with them.
Yeah, that's like that John Hopkins study that was done around generics and Part D. And like, I think it came in at like 79% of them, you might as well just pay cash. Your deductible is so high that if you're someone on maintenance meds on generics, it almost did not make sense for 70, almost let me round up to 80% of everything in the pharmacy from a generics perspective.
That's completely right. And, you know, with these $500+ deductibles in the Part D space, and that's 80% with $500 deductible. Imagine what it is. My family's deductible on our health plan is like $6,500.
Right, right.
So it's like, now that's medical and prescription, but it's whichever one you use first. And we're much more apt to use prescriptions than we are, than we are medical and hospital services during the year, at least currently, knock on wood. So, you know, for us, it's better to pay cash anyway, because we're never going to meet that deductible threshold.
Yep. Speaking of kind of, where you can be a price setter, where you can take a little bit of control. I noticed just a couple of years ago, maybe right after our podcast, it kind of, I think went into effect around contraceptives in Arkansas and prescribing authority, I think, around certain protocols for that. What's that? And even if you're not doing it, I'm sure some folks are, and everyone has their own individual decision on whether they're going to jump, like offer that for their patients. What do you think that's been like throughout Arkansas? Or if you have any personal experience, be cool to share.
We definitely offer the contraceptive services in our pharmacy. My wife does the vast majority of those, and you know, we get the ability to, I think it's, if I remember correctly, to prescribe for up to 6 months, and then they have to refer back for an annual visit. I think it's six, it may be 12 months on that one. I can't remember. Some of the states differ, but we've had uptake. And in fact, not only have we had uptake, we've got one of our major players in the state who is willing to pay us evaluation and management codes for doing that. So really? that's a paradigm shift, and kudos to Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield
for sure.
Recognizing not just on the oral contraceptive side, but on the point of care testing, the evaluation on the front end, the testing itself, and the prescribing for flu and strep, for tobacco cessation, for COVID. I mean, there's a laundry list of things now that we've got the ability to step into that medical billing world on, that we're getting our feet wet on. And it's a different, as we've talked about before, it's a different way of billing. You can bill directly through like an Availity platform, or you can use a Transact to administer those contracts and help as a clearinghouse to submit those bills. But we're seeing an uptick in that. I think the real question is going to be is, now that we've just in the last week seen the official approval and launch to market of the OTC birth control pills, the one that have a progesterone in it, no estrogen, what is that going to do to that demand? I don't think we know that yet, but I do think it's going to continue to elevate, not diminish, the need for pharmacist involvement in those drugs. And I think that's actually an exciting thing.
Was something like that, was there, I guess, strategy or something to think about? It's kind of like when COVID testing kind of first came out to a degree. There's a little bit of awareness the market maybe doesn't get because they don't follow medical or PBM or at patient access reform, really. You're just not. And so what is the education around or the market approach around letting your patients know, hey, we can do this too?
Yeah, I mean, that gets to be a little harder thing to do, because you don't want to offend patients by getting out there and actively, promoting. I mean, to your point, the way you tiptoed into that conversation, I mean, you know, who would have thought oral contraception would have been a taboo topic, but, you know, it is. And just to give you an example, we've got a Catholic health system hospital that is right down the street from us in our community. And they don't cover oral contraception through their normal health plan. So we've had those conversations, but their in-house pharmacy won't fill them, their insurance won't cover them, and we end up getting some of their employees and employees' families for that exact reason. So some of those things actually spawn a dialogue. The Hobby Lobby stuff spawns a dialogue, you just have to be out there and share what you do with your patients. And again, not to harp on testing and vaccines, but every one of those has incrementally opened a dialogue about what else can you do for me. The prescribing of the antivirals and the antibiotics is, well, what else can you do, type of the deal. So it's one of those, you got to toot your own horn, and you have to take and be assertive at the pharmacy counter when you find a problem, and that's a tool you've got to help solve it.
Good stuff. Yeah, and it also probably sparks connections with public health and like you said, partnership with Blue Cross. Sorry, I've got a door now that opens up a little bit if we'll have the conversation.
Yeah, we've actually partnered with our Department of Health on distribution of prophylactics a few years ago. I mean, that continues to be an area that they are obviously concerned with. I mean, we've been a monkeypox vaccinator. Talk about conversations that opened up that you never thought you would, be part of your daily practice. But, you know, just the concept of giving a monkeypox vaccine to a very specific population probably opened up some conversations that the vast majority of pharmacists never thought they would have to have whenever they started pharmacy school, about who qualified for the vaccine, et cetera, and what are the risk factors. And, you know, each one of those is a little bit of a chip in the wall of being concerned about offending people. You go out and do your job because that's part of what your job is now.
For sure. Yeah, there's probably a lot from a pharmacy student you're not taught that you get exposed to as you really start trying to practice. Speaking of like community sound, that's a good like segue into the community. And what I mean by that is like the actual pharmacy community itself. There was just a great, I think it's called a round table at the White House with, I don't know if you caught it, Derek Price, Chichi Alonso, MoMA, and obviously Mark Cuban, along with some others. I just wanted
like
to get
Becerra, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to get
Governor Shears.
I think the world would love to hear Scott Pace's take a little bit or thoughts on all of that.
Well, I mean, let's give the quick Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
I mean, the quote of the day was what Mark Cuban said, which was, I'm hoping you saw this.
I did see it. Yep.
Yeah. PBMs have been shitting on independent pharmacies for years.
Yep.
So let's use the unfiltered version and just, you know, quote what he did. All I can say to that was amen.
Right.
Now to the point, is Mark Cuban prescription drug plan the salvation for us? I don't necessarily think so. I think it's another potential middleman. But what I do like is the fact that he's elevating the dialogue on the lack of value that the PBMs bring to the table when you consider what cost is, what a fair margin is, and what a fair dispensing fee is. And the very fact that he's helping to reset that dialogue, I give him a lot of credit for, because I do think that's where we are. And one of the things, back to the Change Healthcare pivot, but it's related to the White House conversation. You know, the state of Utah has been essentially shut down on their Medicaid program as a result of the Change piece the last 2.5 weeks.
Multiple
but what did our
states,
friend Benjamin Jolly say that they are doing to take the place of Change in billing pharmacy claims? They're using a Google Doc to allow pharmacies to submit claims. So we've gone from these sophisticated, they're necessary in the system, PBM partners, to Benjamin and his folks in Utah are able to do the same basic functions with a Google Doc. So there is a fundamental extraction of dollars in the system that far exceeds the value that is provided by the PBMs. And Mark Cuban, I think, has helped to bring a lot of that to light. So I was really proud of our pharmacy colleagues sitting up there with Secretary Becerra and Governor Beshears, and with the big White House logo in the background. I mean, that's an intimidating thing to be out there telling the message. You know, Darren happens to be a part of an independently operated PBM in Kansas. I think it's in Kansas.
And helps. I think it serves a lot of folks in the Midwest too.
Yeah.
In general.
And so it was nice to hear his perspective on someone who's trying to do it right while still competing with the big guys. And at the end of the day, middlemen who extract more value extract more dollars than the value they provide is a problem in any industry. And it's great to finally see it coming to light in Washington, D.C. It's great that the House took up the managed Medicaid reform. But we need that to continue to finish and get across the finish line too in D.C. And I'm hopeful that before the end of this year that can happen too. Those are big, big issues for pharmacy. But a lot of those are out of our control. And, you know, one of the things I would like to just kind of mention briefly, I talked about this at Multiple Locations Conference. I did a little Take Five program at Multiple Locations on pharmacy leadership and, you know, things that we're doing in our pharmacy to to help motivate our staff during this kind of challenging time, and what are we doing to motivate ourselves, and what are we really focusing on to get back to operating our businesses as well as possible. And one of the things I shared is that I've been working on a program that's NCPA's program. I've just kind of helped in advising on it.
Okay.
On what is something we can do to get back to the basics, or back to what we're calling the core of pharmacy ownership. And I worked with Bree Morris. You know Bree? She was with NCPA for years.
Yeah.
She's now running the Arkansas CPESN. But Bree and I started working about a year ago on just asking pharmacy owners, where are you deficient? Well, you know, where do you think you could be better at? And instead of just assuming that an immunization program or a diabetes program, or you insert whatever program here is their next salvation, it was like, what do you really need to be able to get back to the basics of operating your business? And guess what we heard? We heard from these owners, I need to get back to the basics of finances. I need to get back to the basics of general operations and workflow. And I need to get back to the basics of marketing. And so all of that kind of gave us an incumbent in that, by the way, was I need to get back to the basics of understanding how to be a leader, how to not only motivate myself, but how to motivate a generation of employees that think different than I might think,
right,
that have different value systems than I might have, and how can I still communicate with them so that we can all be on the same team when it comes to operating our pharmacy. So to me, that was really energizing to start thinking about that. And so Bree and I, along with Doug Hoy and his team at NCPA, Kurt Proctor, and now Drew Register, who's kind of taken Bree's spot at NCPA, have put together this program called CORE, which stands for Change, Optimize, Revitalize, and Energize Your Pharmacy. And it's going to be built on subject matter experts. It's going to be a really kind of a labor intensive. You're going to you're going to allocate some time weekly to this program where you're going to focus on leadership, and you're going to be learning from people like Kelly Babcock and Terry Norville,
who are
I think some of the self-help gurus in pharmacy. And I know self-help is not necessarily the right way to say
probably
that.
Probably weird. Yeah. Like I get it. I don't know of a better way to say it either though.
But they have teased out things in me personally. I've done their leadership growth formula weekend seminar myself last year.
Okay.
And it's really eye-opening to, you know, look under the blanket of what makes you tick and look under the blanket of kind of, well, what can I do differently to communicate with folks in a different manner besides how I think is the best way to communicate? And,
sure.
And how do I tease out what are those little voices in my head, what they call saboteurs, that make me doubt what I'm doing or make me even second guess or change what I'm doing in a way that could be harmful? And so Kelly and Terry are going to really lead that leading yourself portion of this CORE program.
Okay.
Our friend Travis Wolf,
love Travis,
from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Travis is awesome.
Oh, so
he's
good.
He's developed himself into what I would consider a really great trainer, using a lot of the staff trainer, using a lot of the same basic leadership tools that Kelly and Terry do. But instead of focusing on yourself, focusing outward on your team and building a common language and being able to get everybody pulling in the same direction, which sometimes is really hard when we feel like we manage crisis to crisis in pharmacy, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, 100%. So that's great.
So those two are going to be involved. And then we're going to have subject matter experts that come in with dealing with finances, dealing with operations in your store, and dealing with marketing in your store. And over the course of a 12-month period, you're going to have six little modules focused on those areas, finance, marketing, and operations. Well, you're going to make six different changes in your store and start making those small incremental changes as part of the program, that at the end of a year, you can go, holy cow, I've made six small changes and it's meant this to me over the course of the year. So it's going to be labor intensive.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of one-on-one interaction with some pharmacy thought leaders and subject matter experts that I think are going to be really, really impactful. It's going to be open for pharmacy owners, pharmacy managers, and in some cases, technicians who maybe helping to drive your ops in your store, but need that next step of what do I do to train them to stay with me long term and make sure that they're successful and fulfilled and my business is benefiting. So that's something else that I talked about at multi locations that I'm really excited about, and I commend NCPA for really looking beyond just a program and looking at kind of holistically, how do we keep people from falling off the cliff, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, you're working on your foundation, right? Like you're a wise man. Like Jeff used to always say, is this quote going around the, probably on the podcast and in the office, you know, wise man build his house on a rock, right? Like just found
100%. And in fact, there was a quote that I used very similar to that, from the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu, but I saw this the other day and I thought it was great. He goes, there comes a point where we need to stop just pulling people out of the river, but we need to go upstream and figure out why they're falling in.
Right.
And I think that's good.
That's
part of what CORE is trying to do. Yeah. It's like, you know, there's some people that have fallen in the river and we naturally want to rescue them, but I really want to help our industry and help NCPA find those ones who are teetering, who need to get back to the basics and not fall in the first place.
And what better time to do it than this year, right? Like with, if, you know, what's that proverb? It was like, when was the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. Yeah. When's the second 100%. Best time? Right now. Right now. So, and you'll see it. Like something like that, you'll see it in every part of your business, not only in the financials, but you'll see it in like your, just your enjoyment or fulfillment, and your team's fulfillment and enjoyment going to work. So that's a great program.
Yeah, we're excited about that. That's going to launch a little bit later this year, a couple more months from now. Hopefully May or June is what we're targeting, but super excited about it. I think it's going to be impactful, and it's probably like people switching to Pioneer, man. You probably wish they would have done it 10 years ago.
Yes,
right.
Yes, I do.
But the impact starts on the first day that they change. That was my sales pitch for you.
It so does. I thought I'd at least Scott, throw that in. Scott, thank you. I needed that. Time to help Mark his numbers today, this month. Thank you. I appreciate that. From that perspective, I guess, I know we're probably getting closer to time on that. Anything else from I know some folks were telling me, I love to get your take on anything legislative. If you're still looking at this, but as people were thinking Rutledge may be a little bit threatened, or somebody was telling me that's all hearsay from my perspective too. But I know NCPA is also urging Congress to take up some PBM reform. I just wanted to get your thoughts or perspective on what they think is needed and where you might see either threats or opportunities.
Well, sure. So first of all, let's talk about Rutledge. I don't necessarily think Rutledge is threatened in the courts at all. Where I think Rutledge is threatened is in the states when it comes to the legislation that different states are trying to pass. So for example, I'll use Michigan as an example. A year and a half or so ago, they passed a piece of PBM legislation in Michigan, and kudos to those folks up in Michigan for being successful in doing that. However, there was a clause in that Michigan legislation that specifically excluded the Rutledge ruling from being applicable to their state law. Well, that's the whole purpose of Rutledge in the first place, is for there to be a uniform set of laws as it pertains to pharmacy pricing across the country. So PCMA has gotten very, very clever at trying to figure out how to undermine that ruling in Rutledge, because they know it empowers the states and they know that pharmacies have political power at those states. I'm not sure from a legal perspective that you can really create a statutory exemption at the state that overrules a U.S. Supreme Court.
Man, that's weird.
I think it's suspect, frankly.
It's like,
but
also, the Second Amendment doesn't apply here either. Right. Yeah, right. Like that's what that sounds like.
But ironically, it will probably take a court case to determine if that is a true thing.
Yeah.
So I think Rutledge is sound, and I think we're gonna see that. We've got some other cases that are floating around. But we still don't know the outcome on in some different circuits besides the 8th, and I don't think Rutledge is going to be impacted by those. But having said that, let's look at the federal legislative efforts, and I kind of touched on this earlier. Mm-hmm. So the House has moved through a PBM reform bill that now is stalled in the Senate, and we've heard that I think it's Senator Cassidy from Louisiana is not happy with that bill because it's not going far enough, supposedly, is what we're hearing. And what I would say to that is, you got 8 more months between now and the end of the year, not 8.5 more months between now and the end of the year to fix it and get it done. We have to start all over with the next Congress. So I'm optimistic that that can happen.
Yep.
But there are only a couple of windows left between now and the end of 2024 for that to happen. And that's significant because that would create that managed Medicaid fix that has been needed to use that fee-for-service kind of cost plus a true dispensing fee model.
Is that making it mandated? Is that kind of what
you're saying? It would be a federal mandate to use that same model, which would be gigantic.
Right.
We've also seen other states. Definitely some states have done that model by using an acquisition cost plus a fee in their managed Medicaid programs, and that's great. And I hope that push continues. But we're also seeing folks start to look at whether or not they need to do that in the commercial marketplace. And I think the answer is definitely going to be yes. I mean, we continue to see these push it to the ground reimbursement rates that are just beyond the ground. I'll just tell you, these are current numbers out of a particular plan in my store.
Okay.
But I have a one particular payer that is paying me about $1.20 above NADAC over a whole bunch of claims. And we got access to claims from two chain competitors that are down the street. And that same payer is paying one of my grocery store competitors about $20 per prescription more than they're paying me. Paying one of my mass market pharmacy competitors $25 a prescription on average more than they are me on the same 200 prescriptions. And so, you know, this is in the same plan, the same network. They're balancing their employer payment guarantees on the backs of independent pharmacies.
Sure.
And we're going to have to start taking more aggressive steps against that legislatively. Mm-hmm. I sure hope that individual pharmacies that contract and to the extent that the PSAOs have any power with the PBMs, that's a challenge too, right? Yep. It's not their fault that the PBMs control the contracting narrative because they put their thumbs down on them too. But the truth is that there's some real inequities right now. And I'll tell you, in my state, for example, in my city, we've had 4 Walgreens close in Little Rock and North Little Rock, Arkansas, since mid-January.
Oh, wow. Since two months ago?
Yeah. Yeah, since 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So not only are they not staying open at rates that are $25 a prescription more than I am, but I'm getting their patients and getting paid bupkis to do it.
Right.
And so, there's some real fundamental issues that still need legislative fixing, but they frankly need marketplace fixing from the employers who are right. buying these bad plans in the first place and not asking the right questions. And so a lot of work still left to do. We're still going to see, if you're asking me crystal ball, as we kind of close out, Mark,
sure.
I think we're going to see more chain retraction over 2024 and 2025. We already know that CVS is closing a whole bunch of stores in that are within the Target world. I think we're going to continue to see Walgreens as we see staffing issues hit them harder than most folks. Continue to look at whether or not they need to downsize their footprint or if they need to, close pharmacies altogether. And the 4 pharmacies that I told you that Walgreens closed, they haven't closed the front end. They just closed the pharmacy. So they're basically Dollar General stores with empty pharmacy counters in the back now. So the marketplace is changing.
It's a weird
daily.
Model too, right?
It's a weird model, So lots to come on the back end, but I think back to my central thesis, there's still 10% of our
yes.
world that we can control.
Yes.
And I would challenge my colleagues and frankly myself every day too, to not get fixated on the 90% that we can't.
Right.
Let's really double down in 2024 on the 10% that we can and make it as good of a year as it can be, because our patients depend on us. There's still a market for us, and I would argue that market's greater today than it has ever been.
I would say that too, and maybe commit to trying to expand that 10%, right? Like
100%,
make it 15%.
Let's at least get it to 25%, right?
Yeah, Make it 30. Yeah, hell, I don't know. So, all right. Well, okay. So I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave and I'll let you leave till we do prescribables. And so
okay.
All that is, and I don't know if anybody teed it up for you yet, but it's just like, what no, are
I'm,
you?
I'm going in blind on
okay,
this. So.
Okay, here we go. No prep, man. Scott's cold turkey here. What are you watching, reading, or listening to? It can be fun. Or it could be work, or could you do one of each that you think the people who watch or listen would like to know about?
Well, so a good question. So when I was heading down to multi-locations a week and a half or so ago, I downloaded a new book called Super Communicators.
Okay.
And so it
I feel
just
like
came
you need
out
no work on any of that, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm only about a quarter of the way through it so far. So let me
there we go.
Preface
it
by saying this, but you know, one of the things I said at multi locations, and I'll come back to Super Communicators, is that shortly after my wife and I got married, she gave me that book, The Five Love Languages.
Okay,
have you ever read
that
book?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't read the book. I have read a what do you call it? The shortened version of that, the cliff notes of it, basically.
Well,
yes.
The cliff notes are this: is that, you know, we all give and receive love in five different ways according to the book.
Yes.
We give it through words of affirmation, through acts of service, through touch, through gifts, through acts of kindness. I think that's what the five of them are. And the point of the book is that just because I show my love through giving you a gift doesn't mean that that's how you like to receive love,
okay.
Right? So
okay.
So the premise is that I could be speaking English, but you only hear Spanish.
Sure.
Is essentially kind of what the premise of the book is. Well, in this new Super Communicator book that I'm reading, it's talking about the types of conversations that people expect to have with one another, and how if you're not expecting the same type of conversation, that you might as well be speaking Greek to each other.
Yeah.
And they call it the three H's in the Super Communicator book. They call it we could be having a conversation because I'm seeking help, or I could be having a conversation because I'm seeking hugs, or I'm having a conversation because I just need to be heard.
Okay.
And so
heard, hugs, and help.
Are you having a conversation for help? Are you having a conversation for hugs? Are you having a conversation just because you need to be heard? And that really resonated with me, because when you're thinking about your employees or your friends or your spouse, how many times does Marcia come to you and go, "Oh, Mark, this, this, and this," and the first thing you do is you go into problem fixing mode and you say, "Well, have you tried X? Have you tried Y? Have you tried Z?" And she ends up getting to the point where she goes, "Will you shut up? I just want to share my story with you."
It's like you're in my house, and, Scott.
It's because it's my house too, Mark. I mean, not Marcia. But I'm just saying that a lot of times my wife will start a conversation with, "I don't need you to fix anything.
Right.
I just need you to listen."
Yes.
And, you know, to me, that's resetting a common language and a foundation for how you communicate with people. And whether it's patients or employees or spouse, that is how you move the ball forward in whatever endeavor that you're dealing with. And so Super Communicators, I'm really enjoying, because I've already picked up that great nugget. And it's not rocket science, but it's presented in a way that resonated with me.
That's cool. I usually do one. I guess what I would tell people for the work stuff, go watch, it's on YouTube, go watch Darid and the whole gang from there, Chi Chi and Mark Cuban, go kill it on that 10 minutes they each get, or 5 minutes they each get in that round table. So we'll put that link in the show notes.
Please do. So
we'll do that. So I would say that go watch it if you haven't watched it. I'll add one for fun, and this is going to be so stupid because I'm the guy in the background watching Marcia shows going, "Why are we even watching this?" And then about an hour into it, I'm like, really into it. And so I'm on Love is Blind season 6, everyone, right now. It's terrible. It's trash. But dang, it's good.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm on the next to last season of Suits, late to that game
good
as
show.
Well.
So good show. Yeah.
Also good, also trash, right. from that standpoint. But Megan got her a prince, so you know, yeah, I feel good about
there,
that.
There you go. That's right. That's a good. She did. So
it's
good.
Anyway, that's. But let me throw one last just general prop here, since you mentioned the White House roundtable. I hope people don't lose sight of the fact that those events, you know, Darid didn't get invited to that event just because. Our friends like Ron Hauser and Ann Cassidy
Yes.
and Doug at NCPA, Doug Hoy, they're constantly in the administration's ears. The, you know, the membership dollars that we spend in helping to support them, that's part of the fruit of what we get out of them. And so I just want to make sure people understand that those don't just happen because, those happen as a result of, that's part of the crescendo of advocacy.
Yeah.
And so kudos to everybody out there who's helped support the organization, who has allowed that crescendo to continue to get louder. And we've got more to do, but that's as a result of all of you.
Couldn't have said it better. Scott, thank you for being back on. Appreciate it. Thanks, you for
Mark.
Everything you're doing in pharmacy as well. And everyone, again, I guess we'll just, we'll see you next time.
Looks great. I appreciate you.
All right, man. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for watching the Catalyst Pharmacy Podcast.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and follow us wherever you get your podcast.
Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more pharmacy professionals like you.